Hey everyone, and welcome back to the Commander Clash podcast. You might notice right off the bat that we have a little bit of a roster change. I am hosting today. It's been a very long time since I've done it because Seth was busy and couldn't make it for this recording. So today I am joined by two of my other co-hosts. It is Phil, aka Brewer's Kitchen. How's it going?
Hey all, finally hyped for a set again. Although kind of hypocritical because it's straight up Universe is Beyond again. This time, yes. I like it though.
Yes.
That's the difference.
And Krim, the Asian Avenger, how's your hype level right now?
Pretty high. I mean, I like the set, right? I like the cards. I like the whole, you know, I just love the show, right? Mm-hmm. I already love the show. I just hadn't seen it in a while. And now seeing all the cards again kind of mm-hmm. has all the feelings kind of just surging through again. So mm-hmm. it feels good to see a lot of this.
Yeah, I'm also partaking in the nostalgia trip a little bit and enjoying the IP. Hi, this is Tomer, aka Budget Commander. And today we are talking about the Avatar set, specifically the top cards from Avatar to put into the 99 of decks. We're going to be doing a future podcast. We're going to be talking about the top commanders to lead new decks from Avatar. But this time we're going to be talking about the cards we're going to be putting in the context of the 99 in the library. I'm also very hyped. Did you all watch? So, Krim, you watched the show. Phil, yeah. Have you watched the show before?
Yes. Mm. Quite a while ago, but big fan still.
Nice. Yeah, me too. I rewatched it recently with Rodrigo, and we watched it in Portuguese, which is a very new take on it. And I quite enjoyed it. I think it holds up still.
Did you get up to Korra?
So I never watched Korra fully.
Same.
until like 2 years ago or something. And then I watched it with Rodrigo for the first time, and I liked it.
I only watched
the original one, but this set is just the original
this
one, right?
This one is just the last Aang Airbender. Yeah. The original series. I do have definitely an appreciation of these cards a little bit more, knowing the context of everything and the reference, which is quite nice. But yeah, before we jump into all the cards, a quick ad read, and I so apologize because usually Seth does it and he could knock this off. Live, no problem. One take. We'll see how well I do. Morgan, make me sound good in the editing. All right. Today's show is brought to you by Foil Armor. Do you have problems with your foils curling? Oh my God, I screwed up already. Well, Foil Armor is the ultimate solution for finding your foils. It's a two-way humidity pack that you simply put inside an airtight container with your cards, and Foil Armor will absorb and release the moisture, making your cards completely flat. Put a pack into your storage box to keep your cards flat forever. Head over to foilarmor.com and use code MTGGoldfish to get 15% off. And today's show is also brought to you by Card Conduit, the easiest way to sell your Magic cards. Are you tired of all the hassles involved with buy-listing your cards? Well, Card Conduit lets you skip all the typing time and work. With the curated service, you can send as many cards as you want with buy-list value $1 or more, and you'll pay just a 5% service fee. And if you want to put in a bit of effort, you can send in. You can use their sorted service where you list and sort your cards in advance and pay a fee of just 2%. No matter which option you choose, you'll get a detailed report with the result and fast payment once your order is processed. Oh yeah, and you can get another 10% off by heading over to cardcondo.com/mtggoldfish. One take, mic drop. All right.
First try.
Sweet.
I don't know why people always say that this is a hard job. It seems so easy if you stutter a lot, like me. All right. Now we get to the good stuff. Okay, so the way we're structuring this is we're going to first talk about some of the staples or like the best cards we think, the most powerful cards in Casual Commander. And then we're going to end the podcast with some of our personal favorite cards, which may not be like power reasons, we just like them a lot. So you get a little bit of the powerful stuff, and then you get a little bit of our personal favorites. So let's kick things off with Krim. What is a powerful new card for the 99?
Okay, so I am thoroughly loving Monk Gyatso. right? So right out the gates, 3 and a white, legendary human monk. Whenever another creature you control becomes the target of a spell or ability, you may airbend that creature. This card, I feel like, is an absolute machine, right? It's able to protect every other creature on your board from anything. Again, not just spells. The fact that it can be abilities, and it's abilities your opponents control, it's abilities you control. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's pretty straightforward, right? Like, you're able to just blink your creature out when they get targeted, which is really good against me. So that now kind of like serves as a way of forcing me to use the removal on Gyatso, which I would definitely do anyways, to get rid of Gyatso before I can try to get rid of your stuff. Because if not, it'll also kind of enable all your blinking shenanigans.
Yeah, I think this is one of my favorite cards from the set. I don't know how strong it is going to be, but like, I feel like it's definitely has so much build around potential. Like, it feels like almost a hexproof that can be, it could be a little bit worse than a hexproof. It's like your opponents want to target your things. Well, now they can, but it will get airbended out and then you have to pay mana to get it back. But at the same time, since you can trigger it, the possibilities are so fun. Like, imagine you have Monk Gyatso in like a blink style deck and then you run Lightning Greaves in that deck. Now for the zero mana, you just move the Lightning Greaves around to your own creatures to blink them. You want airbend them.
You get to do Nadu loops.
You get to do Nadu loops. So that seems incredibly fun. So I like the fact that it's both defensive, but you can also use it proactively. This card is very cool.
I think it is funny that you mentioned build around, but I was actually going to say I would just play this generically.
Yeah, I guess that's the question. Like, you can even go infinite with this, which it reads. And there's not many safety valves here. Like, having this with an happen on your own stuff with an ability as well. I don't know. It's a clunky infinite, but something ETB and then something that ETBs when an artifact hits, and then like something like affinity that reduces the casting cost, and then I don't know, griefs or something.
Well, yeah, I think you still have to pay 2, or can you do a cost reduction on the 2?
I mean, exile it, and you may cast it
reduction
for 2 rather than its mana
still
cost. So it is, is mana cost. It's not put it onto the battlefield for 2 or something. So I don't know. The problem is if it's better, you said it might be worse than, I don't know, hexproof or something. It could also be better, which is why you might want to target it yourself, but then the opponent is just gonna, I mean, they're just gonna target this, which is kind of my fear.
I mean, they have to, right?
So, yeah.
They kind of have, yeah, I mean,
they either have to or they
want to airbend your thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think, like, the only time I don't like it over a hexproof is, like, if your opponent just wants to clear a blocker from you and they'll, like, target a removal on that creature, then either it dies or you have to airbend it out. Whereas if you just had like a hexproof on it, then like a Swiftfoot Boots on it, then you wouldn't have that issue. But like, I feel like just the upside on this is so high, especially when you have like blink or whatever shenanigans. It's such a cool card.
So you think it like cool. It needs to be a blink deck?
If you want to.
Maybe not a blink deck, but like, I don't know. I feel like if I want to have something that I can be proactive with for the airbending, and then I like it.
I love it as just a defensive card. I guess I look at this so defensively. When I have creatures, I want everything to be somewhat of a defensive way of protecting your stuff, right? So I definitely personally like this as a just a very, to put it, it's doing it a bit of a disservice, but I look at it as a bigger spell skite.
Yeah, I just can see mostly, it's very strong defensively.
Yeah.
I don't know how, I would just play it in a deck where you can target it yourself without spending cards to target it. Like, if your commander's like Bumbleflower or something, you can hit them with it.
Like,
yeah, I don't know.
You also have like the activated abilities like Slayer Stronghold, right, from your lands and things like that. Like, it's just really easy. I think it's super easy to.
That, though. I don't know. It's a lot of investment. Unless you blink like a Sun Titan or some actual real impactful trigger, like Moonshaker Cavalry or something. Yeah.
Or just like setting up for your own board wipes.
How repeatable and easy it is. Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
You could target your own things to get them airbended so you can then board wipe. It's cool. It's such a cool design. I like airbending. All right, Phil, what do we got next? What's another powerful card?
Wait, do we go staples first? Or
we're doing staples first. We're doing staples first.
Okay,
yeah,
so
I figured maybe
I gotta...
Prim was talking about staples, and he's just considered a staple. And I was like,
I don't know if this is, like, it seems generically powerful, like the monk, but I don't know. What is going to be a staple, I fear, unless I'm just going to open it real quick so I don't have to pay the $75. That's got to be a mistake. Wan Ching Tong Librarian, X and blue. Do we talk about this again? It is Archivist of Orkma +++. It has Flying Vigilance Flash, and when it enters, put X counters on it and draw half X cards like Hydroid Crosses, and then whenever an opponent searches their library, put a counter on this and draw a card. Very flavorful design in context of the character. Mm-hmm. Also, oh my god, this is so much better than Archivist. And Archivist is one of the cards that I just play in just as a generically good white card. Although in white decks, I prioritize just little things that trigger, like Welcoming Vampire and stuff. I don't think I'm going to play this in any of my blue decks just for value. Maybe if I open it just because I think it's cool, but I wouldn't know what to cut. Like, my own decks are very synergy based. Maybe on Clash, I would just sneak it in because people are cracking more fetches and stuff. Yay. It is insanely powerful, though. I'm not going to lie.
I would play this everything. like, just like, why not, right? It's so good for value, though, right? Plus, your decks love value.
Oh, wait, I just played in Lonus. Never mind. It's a value. Yeah.
It doesn't
thing.
Require yep. you doing anything, right? You just, as long as your opponents are playing like green for ramp and like cracking fetches or just doing any other types of incidental searching, it does so much. And then, worst case, if they're not doing it and you like draw like mid to late game, you could just play it as a mana sink, maybe ambush a creature because it has flash too. Becomes a huge body. Like, is this card just like
vigilant.
Does this card make
so it
any
swings,
blue deck better?
It blocks. Yes.
Like,
yes, it does. Well, okay. Well, it makes it better in that, like, it is just a very solid creature, right? But it's not going to be, like, a game changer card, I don't think. Like, it needs to be moved onto a game changer list. I just think it is a very generically strong blue creature that will, if you have it and if it's not, like, $1 million, I find very few reasons not to play it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's like a fairy mastermind, but better. Yeah. Like, I, when introducing the card, I thought, oh, it's like fairy mastermind. I'm not going to play this in Mishra or something, but I do play it in Lonus. I mean, now I really want to open this. Oh, God, I can't. Yeah. I'm not going to pay for this, though.
It's like,
just
imagine
a
fairy mastermind
card.
Could be a mana sink and also was a huge beater that could also kill a creature.
It plays defensive because it has vigilance, which is going to happen a lot more.
Yeah. That's so wild.
Yeah.
This card is so cracked. I'm also like in the same boat where like I probably won't go out of my way to buy this card because like I do like being very thematic with my cards, even if the cards are worse than like the generic options. But I do think like if I had infinite copies of this card, I think my decks would just all be stronger if I put this in it. So.
Talking about infinite, it kind of draws your deck, which is going to be relevant in Lonus. And yeah, now I want it even more. Oh, no.
All right. Well, I have a card that makes me very, very happy that I think is going to start showing up in a lot of my red decks, too. And hopefully it won't be as expensive, but we'll see. This is the latest Bolt Bend. It is Redirect Lightning. This is a one red mana, instant lesson. As an additional cost to cast a spell, you may pay 5 life or pay 2 generic mana. Change the target of target spell or ability with a single target. So it's essentially like your Bolt Bend, like your Deflecting Swat. It's a redirect effect, but you can always guarantee that cost of just 1 red mana. Deflecting Swat, it's free, but if you need to have your commander out. And then Bolt Bend, it's 1 mana, but you need to have a big enough creature on the board already. This one, you will always have it consistently ready. 5 life is a decent chunk, but like, what do you guys think about this card? I feel like this is like, this is another card that I'm like, is there any reason why I don't put this in my red decks?
This is another. They printed another staple here with this card. I think it is. It's so good, right? Like, I mean, if it's always one mana, that was the problem with Bolt Bend, right? Mm-hmm. You always had to have Ferocious or something like that. And that was just, like, super annoying. And the main thing here is now for one mana at all times, I could do that. And if I want to save the five life, I could pay three. But in Commander, when you have 40 life, this is kind of, like, not really noticeable, especially if you're telling me it's going to be the difference between me pushing a spell through or something like that in mono red and or changing and redirecting spells. And it's flavorful as all heck. So I really love Redirect Lightning as a magic card. And also it's just a big moment in the show. So big fan of this.
Yeah. I guess it depends on how expensive my commander is. Like I have like one slot for this, which I wish I did more because they are always blowouts when they work. But usually I play Deflecting Sword, and I guess if my commander is expensive, I play this instead. Mm-hmm. Maybe I just start playing both, which is probably correct if I'm very red heavy.
Yeah, that's the big question, right? Because, well, Tomer, I know you love these redirects, right? And this is like your jam. So, yeah. But the one thing I've always had an issue with is like finding room for the second redirect and if it's ever worth it. And the answer is most of the time, no. I play Deflecting Swat and I lock that in. This actually now has got me saying, okay, maybe two. Maybe two is worth it.
I think so. Like, there's also, I forget the Duskmourne one again, but it is also quite good, but it's two mana.
Untimely malfunction?
Yes, because it also blows up an artifact. So you're like, well, I guess I can blow up an artifact too. That's kind of flexibility. I don't know. I like to redirect, and then I don't count Return the Favor, because Return the Favor is a redirect.
Just,
but also has
just
more
fetch.
More fun stuff to it. So yeah, I don't know. Yeah, this is, you can't go too much on these, because they are situational, but when they work, oh baby. Do they work?
Yeah.
All right. Krim, what's another staple or powerful card?
Well, okay. Do you want me to say, because like we could talk staple or I can talk.
Let's check off the staples first. Just so
we're going to do like two, maybe one more round of staples, and then we'll jump to the personal stuff, the fun stuff. I mean, this is fun too. I like all these cards, honestly.
Yeah. I am happy that you, like, okay then. I am happy to bring up another staple in Avatar's Wrath.
Oh, so good.
I think this card is really good. It's two white, and then you get to choose a creature, and then exile, and then airbend everything else. Like, is that not just, like, absolutely wild for four mana? And, like, more often than not, like, being able to keep your own creature is a big part of this, because that's just going to allow you to swing the game heavily in your favor. But more importantly, being able to then shut off, because it also has this other part where until your next turn, your opponents can't cast spells from anywhere other than their hands. So that is going to just lock people out, right? Mm. You're the only person on board. And then on top of that, all those things that just got like sent to exile cannot come back for a while, at least a full turn cycle. Combine that with all the rando Draenith Magistrate things, or maybe Avon Interrupter.
Come on.
I'm just saying, guys, that card kind of slaps, dude. Oh my God, this is a good sweeper. I was so happy to open so many of these cards. And you know this is going to be one of those ones, I'm just going to say expect to see it around for a few Clash seasons, at least until you all ban it.
This card, beautiful tokens.
Yeah, it's especially good against like obviously tokens and stuff. But I feel like this is another one that it's like it's so good, and you don't really need to build around it. Like ideally, you're not like a go wide deck. If you're a go wide deck, especially if you're a token deck, maybe you don't want this. But like in any other situation, just like there's going to be a lot of times where you want a Wrath. It saves one of your own creatures. And yes, your opponents get to get those creatures back later on. But it's an entire turn cycle of them not being able to play it because they're in exile. And then until your next turn, they can't cast spells from exile. Also, it shuts off like Graveyard Shenanigans too, incidentally. Like if they want to pop off with like, I don't know, like a Mizium, what's it called? Like Mizzix's Master or something on next turn, they can't. They have to delay for another turn. So it's four mana. It's a very effective Wrath. It buys you so much time. And then also if you're like blink or whatever, enter the battlefield, something, you get to replay those stuff too and get extra value that way. But like, I don't think you need to build around this one. This one's just so good.
Yeah.
It's also good
against... especially Voltron. Like,
oh, yeah, Voltron. Counters, enchantments, equipments, they all fall off. Like, yeah, they can replay
the
stuff.
Yeah, I didn't think about that. That's actually very funny. And it gets around, like, indestructible, too. Like, you can't...
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Yeah. I immediately put this into my favorite avatar of all a character deck, Captain America. So like my favorite avatar is Captain America, and I this card went right in there, dude. It's such a good sweeper. Oh,
yeah, yeah. I definitely want to open up a couple of these copies. Definitely have like a Cauldre deck that's mono white. Absolutely want that. My Aunt May deck absolutely needs this.
Avatar Aunt May? Bro.
Avatar Aunt May. She is the chosen one. okay. Phil, what's another good staple that
okay,
we got
this
here?
One is going to be, I guess, the definition of a staple. For some reason, we got Rampant Growth, just straight up. It's a lesson this time, and it's called Shared Roots, but it's one in a green. Search your library for a basic land, put it onto the battlefield tapped, then shuffle. And I guess the question is, how many of these do we play? I don't want to make room in all of my green decks, but it's the best two drop a green deck has, usually. I guess you can have three visits or something, but it gets basics, which is my reasoning to not make cuts in every deck.
Are you a basic believer, Phil?
I mean, I am if they're old board or foil, but I still don't run too
That's
many
fair.
Of them.
That's
like, it's, I don't want to make more cuts. I don't even know if I like this.
Like, I'm very so curious, Phil. Do you play Rampant Growth now?
Yes, although I started, I was preparing for like a hot takes episode. Wait, did we say this in hot takes? One of my hot takes is maybe Rampant Growth isn't a must anymore, but then if I don't mulligan into a hand with three visits or whatever my reasoning for this is, I kind of would like a Shared Roots or Rampant Growth there. If I don't know, say, I think this is just the next copy. It's like Rampant Growth, Farseek, three visits, Nature's Law, then Shared Roots. Edge
well,
of
maybe
Autumn,
not Farseek if you're in mono green, but
oh, yeah, mono green. Yeah.
But I definitely agree with Phil. I don't think Rampant Growth is a staple that it used to be. I think there's some green decks that just don't want it. But if you are running Rampant Growth, and I think a lot of decks still want that card, then like you should, I think, be running Shared Roots, right? Because Rampant Growth is best on turn two and stuff, and I think that is a type of card you want more than one copy of. And there's not that many Rampant Growth-y effects that are out at two. Like, there's three visits, Nature's Lore, Farseek if you're multicolored,
I guess.
Rampant Growth. So I think this is good to have just a second card. If you want Rampant Growth in your deck, I believe, right?
Yeah, where you'd want a Rampant Growth, obviously that is very, very good. But, like, I guess my thing here is I'll start with Nature's Lore. I'll do three visits, right? And then, again, multicolored Farseek, right? But then after that, I start looking into different ramp packages where, like, I would rather a Cultivate than a Rampant Growth where because that gets me the land on board, but then it gets me a land in hand. And
curve. Upgrade this as well.
I mean, like, I don't know. And then you start getting into, like, Omen Path Journey, where you get four, like, the four-cost enchantment, right? And I only want so much ramp because I don't want to load up with too much air. And if I'm playing, so I just don't play Rampant Growth anymore. There's just better ways to ramp now.
Yeah, but turn I got two, Rampant Growth, and then turn three, Omen Path.
I mean, you're right. Like, there is, but then, like, are you really loading up on that many two-drop ramp spells?
No.
Depends on, if your commander draws cards, I'd say yes. Or, like, is expensive or any form of card advantage. I have to admit, though, I am running a lot of Clifftop, Lookout, Wood Elves and stuff to justify playing Flare of Cultivation instead of Cultivate.
Ooh.
Because that's right? That super.
There's more upside there. Creatures. It being attached to creatures, like you just mentioned, they're wood elves. I like a lot more because there's more applications. Yeah.
Probably the best ramp in Grows of Sakura Tribe Elder. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've been there personally too. Yeah.
I still think it's probably correct to play. It's like people that say, oh, I don't need a Soul Ring in my deck.
Yeah.
If your commander does any form of card advantage, it just accumulates over the game.
Level.
If you ramp on turn two, that is so much extra mana, and extra mana is usually the bottleneck these days. So I think it's just
I don't think this is a staple, guys. I think this is a staple in 2013. Right? Like maybe 2011.
This will be an interesting debate though. Because I do kind of agree with Krim. There's some of my green decks don't have rampant growth anymore. So
the same, but like I don't think it's correct.
Yeah. But like I'm moving to, like if I have no budget, I go like more burgeoning and exploration these days. And like if I am budget, like if I have heavy access to green consistently on turn one, I really like Wild Growth. I feel like those type of cards, Wild Growth, Utopia Sprawl, it's like I'm very forest heavy. Like those are one drop in auras at the tap for one color. So they do the same thing. And unless you're in like a super heavy like Undo Inversion meta where all your enchantments will die by turn five, I think like these cards are very good though.
I don't know, man. I don't even think Rampant Growth is like playable anymore. It's like if you're a super duper ramp focused deck, like, and all your like you're a lands deck, then okay, maybe. But even then, I just feel like there's better even budget options, and there's better ways to ramp, and it's in creature forms. Then I start looking into things like you know the work my way up to like Ice Till Explorer right at the top. Mm-hmm. There. So there's lots of creatures that can allow you to do stuff that
Dice
is just way better. Huh?
Dice to Wrath, though. Come on.
Dice to Wrath, maybe, but there's just... Right, guys? Come on.
I think there's a case. I think there's a case. We need to know from
really?
The comments.
Like... But if there's a case, right? If there's a case to keep this, is it a staple?
Wait, it is for sure.
I think a lot of people consider Rampant Growth a staple, though. So I feel like
still?
This is a good PSA for people who are like, I put Rampant Growth on all my green decks, which I don't think is a bad thing, by the way. But like, if you are, then I think you should just be running Shared Roots as well, right?
Yeah, yeah. If you can find the reason to play a Rampant Growth, that is one thing. But I guess my question is on Rampant Growth itself. Now, obviously, if you have like this is Rampant Growth that you know that came from middle school or something like that, and this is sentimental, that is you know not a part of this. But like strictly from just like deck building and whatnot, I just do not use Rampant Growth anymore.
True. Well, we're going to have to find out on a different... This is a good topic that we can actually come back to on a different time. What staples are no longer... Like, old staples that everybody considers staples should no longer be considered staples anymore. Maybe we need to rethink some, like, the old concepts, the old favorites. We'll come back to it. Let us know in the comments section which ones you think... First of all, if you agree with this, and then also
which
other ones fell off. Don't say Solemn. Don't hurt
Who's
me like
washed?
That.
Yeah. What card's washed now?
And you can't say Solemn Simulacrum. You can't say that to my boy, my
True.
Sad boy.
Okay,
all right, we'll move on. Okay, I want to cheat a little bit. I'm so sorry. No. I don't have to cheat. This is one I'm actually like super excited for. Waterbender's Restoration. It's two blue mana, two blue pips, instant lesson. As an additional cost to cast a spell, Waterbend X, which is a new mechanic in Avatar that says, while paying a waterbend cost, you can tap your artifacts and creatures to help. Each one pays for one generic mana. So I can't pay for blue like Convoke does. It's more like improvise. And then exile X target creatures you control. Return those cards to the battlefield under their owner's control at the beginning of the next end step. So this is kind of like, what's it called? Like an eerie interlude. It's like a delayed blink effect that can either reuse, enter the battlefield, leave the battlefield triggers. But probably more useful than that is like if somebody tries to go for a board wipe, now you could potentially just hold up two blue mana and then tap down your creatures, tap down like some tokens you have, some artifacts or whatever, and then save your board that way. So it's like a very, is this the most mana efficient like board wipe protection that blue has?
I mean, the March.
It's like March, yeah. You have to exile blue cards to do it more mana efficiently. This one you just tap it down.
It's pretty good to dodge around. That's your
just straight up counter spell works too. I guess yeah, it's a little bit more narrow just because blue does have other responses. But I don't know. This kind of looks like blue's clever concealment almost to me. What do you guys think?
I don't know.
Am I overhyped?
In Blink, I think, because it can't phase out, like, March is good because you can phase out opponent's creatures.
That's true.
I wish it did the same for artifacts. Then I would actually put it into my Mishra deck because, man, do I need some protection there. I would lean on playing a counter instead, unless my creatures have enter the battlefield triggers. I like how clean it is to just tap everything and then blink everything, though. Wish it was the same for artifacts, though. These poor guys. Mm.
I got bad news for you. That's why I think this card is fine. Like, it's good, right? But there is... We just had it in the prior set. The one that Phil was actually asking for. Yeah.
High from the ceiling is also sick. It also gets artifacts, too. But you have to pay the mana.
Sure, you pay the mana, but you can use it aggressively, like, you know, proactively. You could also be defensive with it, and you save your artifacts and your creatures. Like, you know what I mean? So, like, I really, really like that. And this card is only saving your creatures, right? And that's it. So, I don't know. Yeah, you save on the mana, but you get more versatility out of the other one. So, that's the trade-off here. So, I think this is a fine card. I think this is a fine card. But this is, like, card number 5. Right, of this effect.
Yeah, I don't think it's like a strict upgrade to what everything we have, but it is like a side grade for certain decks. Like, Phil, would you consider running this in Lonus, for example? Because you can like tap down your clues to waterbend? Or is that still a little bit too fancy?
Tap my creatures, though.
Oh, yeah, yeah. But I figured like tapping the clues is easier.
It is a little bit of a blink deck. It's not a creature, though. I play the... what is it called? There's a creature that faces your creatures. That's my Wrath Protection in Lonus. Let me check. It is called Spectral Adversary. It costs way more mana.
Oh, boy.
But it's a creature, so...
All right.
It has priority in this deck.
Fair enough. It makes it... I like the mana efficiency, but yeah, it's not like... It's not a strict upgrade in all senses, I guess.
If you love, you know, water bending and the flavor, obviously, if you're an Avatar fan, this is better than anything, right? Because again, functionality probably takes backseat to flavor, right?
I don't think it's that bad, you guys.
No, it's not a bad card. It's not a bad card.
If you're just like Avatar, you can run these shitty cards.
It's like when somebody shows you a song.
I love
the beat is good.
Happy for you.
So, funny enough,
I really
this
like
is
Katara. This is great.
You want to know something funny? I had one issue with the Avatar cards.
Yeah,
and it is that this whole set, I felt like waterbending, which I normally really like, right? Mm-hmm. Didn't it only focused on to me? I feel like waterbending was more defensive, right? Mm-hmm. Is how it should play more defensive, and this is one of those cards. So this is actually very flavorfully towards the direction of how I wanted waterbending to go. But it ended up just kind of being like this convoke with me merge with improvise. Yeah, I get it. Water flows through us and you know that whole thing, right? You move as a unit. But I thought it'd be more defensive, and this actually does that. So I like this card for those purposes. The problem here is the defensive cards like this. This is like the fourth best one, right? The fifth best one. And how many of these are you running? So like if you're an Avatar fan, you know, and like I love waterbending and all the flavor of it, and maybe like you're the four color Avatar Aang, you want to check that box for waterbending, then this is great for that. That serves that purpose. It's better in those places. But yeah, just not there for me yet.
That's fair.
On raw power.
That's fair. All right. Do you want to do one more round of powerful cards, or do you want to jump to the personal favorites?
Well,
I feel like there's fine with either.
Some of them are hand in hand.
Okay. Well, let's go, Krim. Tell us about something that you think is a strong one, but also a personal favorite. Then,
okay. So I, boy, do I love the Legend Cycle, right?
Yes.
But specifically, okay. I love the Legend of Yangshen.
Yes. So the Legend of Yangshen. Okay.
Yes.
We're twinsies.
Yes. Right. Okay.
Yes. Tell me about
it. You get to ECD, Elspeth Conquers Death. You get a starting with you. Each player chooses up to the one permanent with mana value three or greater from among permanents your opponents control. Exile those permanents. So on chapter one, everybody's got to pick something that's not yours, and it has to cost three or greater, and then exile it. Awesome.
Insane.
And then you may have target opponent draw three cards. If you do, draw three cards. Then you get to Secret Rendezvous. So after I have now taken away your best card, I could maybe be like, hey, buddy, give you three cards. You know, we're cool now, right? Squaresies. Or catch up whoever's last. But the main thing here is you get a Secret Rendezvous. This one is a little weird because, like, Krim, you don't like Secret Rendezvous. You say that gives people cards. Why do you like this? Because it's attached to removal. So, like, I am taking something off the board, and so really, I'm drawing what is essentially six cards, potentially even more, because I'm exiling three, getting three of the biggest things that are three or greater off the board, and then drawing myself three. So, I really like that. And then, of course, the last part is when she flips, and you get Avatar Yangshen. That's when, you know, you cast your second spell each turn. Then you get to airbend up to one other target non-land permanent, not a creature. So you get to airbend another thing on board. This is awesome, right? Like every step of the way here, I want it. I want everything here, and it's, and again, it is such a solid cost at five. It's not too expensive to where it's comedic, and it's not cheap enough to where I think this needs to be banned or anything like that or busted. So it is at the right and appropriate cost, and it does so much work.
I am 100% on board with you, Krim. I feel like the Legends, like, that was like my ace in the hole on, like, if you can't win you guys on some other cards, I can win you guys on this one. I feel
just
like
pick four cards.
Yeah, these five mythic sagas are, all of them are very good. There's one for each monocolor, but I mean, some are, I think, better than others. But, like, I think for sagas, the most important thing is that first chapter needs to be good. Because if the value is front loaded, then the rest is gravy. Because I can't guarantee that saga is going to stick around forever. But that first chapter, that's firing off, and that's what's the immediate value that's important. And this one, Legend of Yangshen, for five mana, this feels like a souped up, like, Druid of Purification. I love Druid Purification. It can take out multiple targets every single time for four mana. This is even better because not only does it take out multiple targets, just like Druid of Purification, it's any permanent. It's not just artifacts or enchantments. Yeah, it has a mana value part, but, like, those are typically the things you want to be hitting anyway. And it exiles it. And then everything else is just, like, more value, more value, more value, and the backside's insane. But, like, it's that first chapter so good. I'll just say
the backside is insane. Whenever you cast your second spell, you should airbend up to one target. I guess it's... I'm probably underestimating this. Well, if you say this,
the backside is awesome?
I mean, even if you're not using it on your own stuff, just imagine how annoying it is constantly airbending all your opponent's stuff.
Yeah.
Oh, wait.
I think it's better on your opponent's stuff, right? Just to get some tempo. Because otherwise, there's easier ways to airbend your stuff if you want.
Yeah. But it's
but
like
then
the
again,
bonus.
Yes, there's easier ways, but in one card that does that and that only. This does all of that in one.
It would be
kind of
nice if it could airbend itself. That would.
Okay, well, then that'd be. Would like come on now, right?
Well, you could airbend something that then airbends it and, like, the anger or whatever. And honestly, I think also the rest of the saga, too, is very good. Like, my second favorite is probably the Legend of Roku. It's a four mana red, and that first chapter is you impulse draw three cards, and you can play it until your next turn. So for four mana, it's like a red harmonize, and then everything else is gravy. And then even like the green one too, six mana, draw cards equal to the greatest power among creatures you control. That's like maybe one mana too much for this effect. But then on top of that, after, if it sits around longer, it earthbends a huge amount. And then it turns into a creature that also taps for insane amounts of mana. Like, I think all of these cards are just so good. Just so good.
Yeah, the black one is... I mean, it's a rough...
Black one's, like, a little bit slow.
Black one's the weakest, I think, of them, in my opinion.
But then even
the second
backside is a
better
big creature.
In 1v1.
Yeah. But then the backside, you got a big creature that's actually pretty decent. But yeah, I think all of these... So
yeah, I like... I like sagas. I like the summons. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, these are just another one of those sagas that I will probably... Like, the white one, I think, is the one that I play the most. Wait, the blue one, Ah, the blue one is a little. I guess it's 4 mana. Then scry 2, then draw a card 2 times. And then it flips into whenever you cast a spell, create a token.
Mm-hmm.
Wait. And an extra draw.
And you create a token. Oh, minus Khalgar. Minus Khalgar is turning over there. Ooh, even Lonas. Lonas is definitely going to make, what, it's 20? Lonas can make 20 clues. I believe in you.
But I don't want to take extra turns. And I don't want to pay 4 mana to scry 2, then draw a card twice before I get killed because, oh no, extra turns.
I do think the blue one is the might be the least good just because the take an extra turn is such a high bar to get, but it's going to get a lot of threat. People are going to be too scared of it.
Yeah, you're not going to play this unless you abuse this, right?
I mean, so, I'm probably going to play it anyway. It
would be a shame if there's a way to abuse this.
I like being the problem sometimes. But, all right, so that was the Saga cycle. And, I'm totally on board. That's amazing. Phil, what's another card that you are excited for?
I guess I'm going to keep it with the cycle here, although I kind of just think that two cards of these are good. It's the new rare land cycle, and I've got to say, I've been a little burnt with saying the opportunity cost is so low with lands these days because adventure lands are not too good. Then we had a lot of the lands from Tarkir weren't too good, except for the counter one as well.
Mm-hmm.
These ones, though, it's got to be easy to trigger, at least in monocolor. This land enters tapped unless you control a basic land.
Mm-hmm. That's the entire cycle.
Condition. If they are untapped, I'm still at the belief that any value is good value there. Just play some basics. And with these, you kind of get punished if you cut basics for lands like these. But I think the best one is the white or the green one. I'm going to read all real quick because they all have... They tap for their color, and then white one is 4 mana tap, put a counter on each creature you control. Blue one is draw a card, discard a card for 3 mana tap. Green one is Earthbend 2, only as a sorcery, sadly, for 3 mana. Fire Nation Palace is target creature you control against fire breeding 4 until end of turn, so when it attacks, 4 mana, and then it empties. And then Realm of Koh, the Rack one, very overpriced. It is, I think, 4 mana, create a spirit that can block. Like, it can block spirits. And it can only be blocked by spirits. So maybe play it in a unblockable deck or something. I think the white one is just going to be good in board stalls. Put a counter on every creature. It's just going to be... It's going to add up. And then I guess if you have some synergies like Exemplar of Light or something to get value out of drawing, out of putting counters or something, sure. And I think the green one...
Earthbending, but it's sorcery.
Yeah, it is sorcery. Otherwise, so with Earthbending, you put counters on the land, and then when it dies or gets exiled, it comes back. So... It is a clunky way. I'm going to come back to this later, but it is a way to trigger landfall. If this was instant speed, man, you'd have infinite jump blockers with this.
Yeah, you could target you could play like a fetch land, and then
you can get it with
you can
fetch
earthbend
lands,
it, and then it's kind of like a weird ramp ability.
I like
that's how earthbend is broken, by the way. It looks like, this is a cool way of attacking you for your lands, but like the optimized way is just, this is a cool way of reusing all my fetch lands.
Yeah, and like, was
for extra landfall triggers.
That
which
is,
me.
Yeah, I meant
very good.
Why I like it, but at the same time, sorcery speed is, there is no
sorcery
bigger
is,
red flag to me than seeing that I cannot do things at instant speed. But
that's true.
I can't tell if the card is like good. Or I have just this heavily biased opinion because it's Ba Sing Se. So I just want to put Ba Sing Se in the deck, right? But
I'm actually
maybe it's good. I don't know. Do you think Ba Sing Se is good? I like Ba Sing Se, but
I mean, good. You get it is very incremental value. Again, untapped if you control a basic, which it's gotta be easy, right?
Sure. I'm gonna treat these as tap lands, just as a tap land.
Yeah, probably.
would you play?
I would never. Oh, okay.
Tomer, they'll be untapped for you.
Yeah, they'll be untapped. I will go for my hot take. I think the red one is like the only one I would actually seriously consider playing
for two mana and ten.
I think Fire Nation Palace is very good. Not because it's my preview card.
Yeah, it's very narrow, but it's the only one that, first of all, the activation cost is the cheapest. It's only two mana and tap it. And then secondly, this is the only one that's actually a ramp. And it's ramp in red, which is like very exciting. So yes, you get something fire breathing, you get something fire bending. And so that means you have a creature and you have to be attacking with that creature. So there is like a little bit of a hoop to that. But then you're essentially going up one red mana when you're doing so. And if you could utilize that mana with fire bending, then it becomes very good. And like, you know me, I love my red decks. I love, like, one of my most played cards is Big Score, Unexpected Windfall. It's nice to have a one mana discount on those type of effects. I could definitely be using this pretty reliably. So that's why I like this card a lot. It's actually ramp in red, which is, that's why I just like firebending in general. It's such a cool, flavorful way of giving red more, like, incremental ramp. You don't have to just be a storm deck all the time to ramp.
Yeah.
Which is cool. I don't know. Yeah, but they're all sick. Would anybody run like the blue one? The
It's a loot. Yeah, I guess.
Loots for three in tap.
Effective four, only in reanimator decks or something. If you were in a, if you get,
yeah, you could set up a reanimator.
You get value from this guy.
Yeah.
It's nice because of it not having red, so it opens it up to like like blue black reanimator, Sultai reanimator. Whereas like before, you only had Desolate Lighthouse, like, but that had the issue of being in blue red.
Mm-hmm.
So I get down with this. This card's good. It's always nice to have a discard outlet in anything that is blue or black, right? So this will slot in there.
Jeskai has this archetype where you draw your second card each turn.
Yeah.
I guess my Manios Kaga deck has it as well, but then it's three colors. It's going to be tapped. So I'm not going to play this as a tapped land. Uh-huh. Could also just, I don't know, create a token and draw a card with Manios Kaga. I don't think card draw is too hard. So the blue one.
Maybe your mono blue.
I guess the worst one is the black one, unless you really want creatures that are hard to block.
That just seems like a limited thing, honestly. Okay. Who do we have next? Is it me? It's me. Okay, I have one. This is probably my personal favorite, like, singular card from the set. I don't know. There's a lot that I really, really enjoy from the set. I'm actually a big fan of everything that's going on. Aang, Swift Savior is a 3-mana Azoria. So one generic, one white, one blue. Legendary creature, human avatar ally. It's a 2/3 with flash, flying, and when it enters, airbend up to one other target creature or spell. And then it has waterbending 8. You transform Aang. The backside is Aang and La Ocean's Fury. It's a 5/5 reach trampler, and when it attacks, you put a +1/+1 counter on each tapped creature you control, which includes itself if it's like attacking or whatever. I love this card because the front side really like evokes the original Venser Shaper Savant, which is one of my favorite cards of all time. Venser is like a 4-mana version of this. His only upside really is that he can hit any non-land permanent, whereas Aang can only hit a creature or spell.
Lance.
Oh, he can hit. He can land. Oh, yeah. Sorry. Yeah. So Venser has some his advantages, but then Aang costs one less mana. His most interesting parts, for me at least, are like hitting like a creature or hitting a spell. And then he has a full backside on top of all that. So not only is he doing most of the Venser things, he's a great blink target. He's great as like a pseudo counter spell, pseudo protection, pseudo removal of a creature or whatever like that. But then on top of that, if you aren't blinking him or you just have 8-mana / you can waterbend, he turns into a serious threat. And he attacks immediately. He can attack immediately as like a 6/6 with trample. And he's pumping your entire team permanently while he's doing that, if they're attacking or tapped. Is this card... I love this card.
Pretty cool. I
what's
overread
the meme?
The
Welcome
spell
back,
part.
Spell Queller?
Yeah.
Yep.
The Spell Queller's Reborn. I love this card. This card is so sick. And the ability, like nowadays, right? Like, you know that every card that comes into play generates like another game piece, whether like whatever it is, right? And because of that, you can waterbend your way into the 5/5 or whatever, the Angen Law. I think this card is very versatile. I think this card is also able to save your own stuff, which is more important. And that is why I've really thoroughly enjoyed airbending.
Yeah, it seems I didn't know about the spell part, and it's just I overread it in spoiler season. So yeah, it's amazing.
I'm at least putting it in my Zedru deck because my Zedru deck is like very permanent heavy because I want to donate my permanents over to my opponents, and this can actually let me airbend something that I donate, a creature that I donate, and then it's the owner who gets to cast it for 2 mana, not the controller. Mm. So I will give you, I don't know, a Gilded Drake or whatever. And then I will airbend it back to my side, which is hilarious. And yeah, I love it. Oh, that's great. Anyway, Krim, hit us up with another card that you love.
Okay. This is one that I am a pretty big fan of. And it's Unagi of Kyoshi Isle. So I really, 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 really cannot stress enough how cool of a design this card is. It doesn't look like much, right? Or, sorry, not Kyoshi Isle, but Kyoshi Island. But it being a flash 5-mana 5/5, but with ward waterbend 4, that's awesome. They're playing around with the ward cost, so just seeing that alone makes me very excited. Of course, for some decks, that's going to read like vanilla text because they can just pay that very easily. But the other half of this is whenever an opponent draws their second card each turn, you draw 2 cards. So now we're beefing up Fairy Mastermind. And I like that. I like that we get to draw 2 when an opponent draws a second card each turn. I like that it has ward. I like that it's not some small, tiny creature. And it is a real body. So not only will you surprise somebody off the top rope and block this, you could also use it to draw cards with. It's got relatively good protection in Waterbend 4. I couldn't ask for more because now it's just more draw punishers in non-traditional ways. So I just like this card.
I've heard this one called Consecrated Eel because it draws cards off your opponents.
Consecrated Eel. I like that. Yeah. I like that.
But it's more of a Fairy Mastermind. But it's like Fairy Mastermind hit the gym, bulked up, and now is eating a creature as it enters.
He is so swole, and I love it.
Yeah. I mean, I like Fairy Mastermind. I like everything where the opponent doing something does something for me because that makes the opponent's turns more interesting because I have to check if they break my little rules. I wouldn't play it generically, I think. Although if I play Lauren or something, you can tap it to have them and you draw a card. That might already be enough. Like, if I can do this every turn cycle, I'd say, well, that is hella value. Drawing 2 cards is so cool. And it is a scary, scary Ambush Viper. Although Ambush Viper is Death Touch, but 5/5, you're just going to eat something. Okay. Maybe like an unassuming commander or like whatever. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, and then even if it doesn't eat anything, like the fact that it has a little bit of like a ward going on, this is a nice package.
Is that not a little bit of a flavor? You can't just be a waterbender all of a sudden. Like your opponents, what if they are firebenders and now they can waterbend? What?
Water flows through all of us, Phil.
Yes. Okay.
All right. So like
maybe the eel's teaching them waterbending. It's like, this is how you kill me. You just do this.
He gives them a water. Waves. You do the wave, and then everything is fine.
Oh, good. All right, speaking of good cards, though, Phil, hit us up with one more.
All right. We'll do a lightning round.
After this one, lightning round.
I'm just thinking about the card I do for the lightning round. This one, though, it is, I don't know if it's a staple. It is very, very staple when you need it. It is Bifong's Bounty Hunters, 4 mana, 4/4. Classic stats nowadays, and then whenever a non-land creature you control dies, Earthbend X, where X is that creature's power. That is not non-token creature. It also means that if plants from Necrobloom die, you Earthbend 0 and they die immediately, and you trigger Necrobloom again to get another token. So I guess I put this into Necrobloom almost like an auto include. It is also one of these. It's like Pitiless Plunderer. Everything that just dies when token triggers when token dies is very easy to abuse. And this one is like, yay, sir. It does a thing. It's so abusable. Like, now that you opened my eyes to fetch land, Earthbend, that also seems abusable.
This seems like just a new, like if you're in a Golgari sacrifice style deck and you run a bunch of fetches, is this not just like the easiest slam dunk?
Yeah, that's what I mean. I feel like it's a little too on the nose for like my Necrobloom deck is sacrifice and landfall, and this is like both. So
perfect.
4 mana is a lot, but 3 or anything below this would just be criminal. I think it's fine. It's like a Pitiless Plunder. It's one of these things where that you play and then say, oh, that's a combo. Even if you don't plan on comboing, I think this with... We're going to find out combos with this.
Just I mean, there are so many powerful earthbending cards in this set. We could do like a video just talking about the best one. But they're like very... They're all very cool, and they all like fit into different like type of archetypes, which I really... appreciate. Like there's a lot of variety here. Okay, we do a lightning round to end the video. Can be whatever card you want, and yeah, let's start off with Krim. Take it away.
All right, lightning round. I think this is so hard because there's two cards that I think are really good, but I'm just gonna go I'm gonna go with Lowen Lee, Royal Adversaries, right? Like this, come on, right? This is a card that's obviously for me. This card, I can point at it safely and say this is mine. And for those that don't know what Lowen Lee is, it's 2BB, Human Advisor 3/3s. Whenever an opponent discards a card or mills one or more cards, put a 1/1 counter on each advisor you control, and you can pay 2 and a hybrid 2/BB. Target player mills 4 cards. You get to just have mill attached to the body. There's the numerous memes. You already know that you could play petitioners or whatever, persistent petitioners, and build a whole deck out of that with this as the commander. But I actually love Lowen Lee just as a generic creature that can mill 4. And it pumping itself, great news. I am not going to build around adversaries. I am just playing this as an honest mill creature. Having that activated ability also...
At least it's not
Discard. This is not disgusting, right? This is fair. This is fair. It's 3 mana to activate.
It's a 3 mana without a tap. That seems a little scary. But yeah.
It's a
4 mana. I'm not saying it's broken or something. It just incentivizes disgusting decks.
My only comment will be, I really want a Grandma Clash where we have versus Lowen Lee versus Aunt May, and we need one more to just wrap it up together. Oh, I mean, it's
Jaya,
gonna be glorious.
Ballard,
Jaya Ballard.
Although when she's a Grandma, she's in the Planeswalker, so you can only play the young version, right?
We'll go digging. There might be other options.
We find a way.
I love that plan. I love that plan, and I love that showdown, and I love Lowen Lee as a card.
Fantastic. All right.
They are so funny to me. Sorry. Like, I don't know if you remember that episode at the end when they're like, when Azula's banishing everyone, and she's I banish you. It's like, I'm banishing. Oh, wait, which one are you?
Yeah, like she was like banishing Lee, and she's like, wait, I'm Lee. Like,
that was a great episode.
A little good stuff. All right, Phil, your last card that you want to shout out.
Okay, mine is also technically a commander. This one is for the... Oh, wait. We were talking about 99s. Whatever, it's the lightning round. But mine is actually for the 99s, I think, because Mono Green has other stuff to do. It's the Earth King. It is 4 mana, 2/2. So it comes with a 4/4 bear, very cute, Bosco? I want to see the token for this. This is so cool. And then kind of scary other text. Like 4 mana comes with a... It's 2/2, comes with a 4/4. It is above rate for sure. But then whenever one or more creatures you control with power 4 or greater attack, search your library for that many basic land cards, put them onto the battlefield tapped. Maybe you gotta be mono green and play this SU commander just because you're gonna get so many basics. Mm-hmm. But that seems, maybe it's win more and I'm overestimating how easy it is to get a bunch of four power things. But that's like, there's whole archetypes like the Iski or something. There's a Timur four power things. My God, this is so easy to trigger. It gives you the token to trigger it. It's way above rate, I think. It's cool to blink. It is a very cute card, and I'm sure the token is going to be very cute as well. Not a legendary token, though. It's, ah, man, so much.
It's also a bear, but it's so not a 2/2, which ruins me.
It's,
I mean,
two bears.
It's two bears. It should have been two bears in a trench coat. I think this card's, yeah, disgustingly good. Like, I it gives me like Kodama of like the West Tree vibes, where it's like,
yeah,
you have to be modified any ramp. Like, this is arguably even easier for green. Four power creatures.
So yeah, it's so,
you just have
like,
to attack.
There's so many three mana, four threes or something these
yeah,
days.
That's so crazy.
The Surok or some, I don't know. You just play this on three,
you
play
run
this
basics,
on four,
though.
And then trigger it. You gotta run basics, yeah, but...
This is
boring. You don't want
a reason to do this.
This is actually buffing basics, honestly. These cards being so correct make basics actually more powerful, so I'm here for it.
I mean, that's okay. One of the things that I think is really cool about current card design is now they've made it so that there's benefits to either or, right? They've really incentivized you to either go, here's your rewards for basics and none. So I like that.
Yeah, I like that they're giving more and more benefits to different options, which is sweet. Okay, I realized that I missed the full explanation, so I'm going to make it up by having a cycle that I want to mention. I'm only going to talk about one card, but I think this entire cycle is also incredible, but it's much more specific. I'm talking about the Ascension cycle. So it's a cycle of enchantments, one for each monocolor. They're not all two mana. Some of them are like three mana or so, but they're all relatively cheap. They all have an enter the battlefield effect. And then they all get like quest counters, like Beastmaster Ascension. It's a callback to that. And then once you've accumulated enough quest counters, they permanently lock on this new ability. My favorite out of all, I like all of them. I think all of them are amazing in specific decks. My favorite one, because I am a red player, is Firebender Ascension. Two mana red enchantment. When this enchantment enters, you create a 2/2 red sorcery creature token of firebending 1. And whenever a creature you control attacking causes a triggered ability of that creature to trigger, put a quest counter on this enchantment. And then if it has four or more quest counters, you may copy that ability. You may choose new targets for it. So it's kind of like, it's like attack-based Panharmonicon. It's an attack doubler effect. Its ETB immediately gives you a body, so it's two drop that gives you a body that also has firebending, so it's pseudo ramp if you can utilize it, but also adds quest counters because it is an attack trigger on two mana, for two mana. Oh, it's so fun. So if you're like an attack based deck and you like attack triggers, like, it's so efficient. It even comes with a body that helps put quest counters for you.
Yeah, they all fuel themselves, right?
This is so good.
They all help push. Yeah.
Like the Waterbending Ascension has waterbending, so you can get something unblockable. And it's a two mana Coastal Piracy that you have to like unlock. But like it can get something unblockable, so it's easier for it to hit people to get those quest counters to draw cards.
I really like Airbender Ascension.
And
Earthbender Ascension too. Like, so yeah, every Ascension in this whole cycle is super solid. So, I lean towards the airbending one just because it also could be used, as a way to blink something else from your opponent out of the game. So, all the Ascension cycle is just peak. I think this is a all cheap enough enchantment that comes down with low investment. I just really like that.
Wait,
you have a favorite, Phil?
Oh, man. Yeah, Airbender Ascension is so trivially easy to trigger.
Oh, yeah. Then it's a two mana Conjurer's Closet, no?
Yeah. And then it just triggers when a creature enters. It's not even enters from exile or something.
No, you can have tokens enter.
Yep.
That is too easy.
That's probably the easiest one out of all of them.
Yeah. It's very cool how pushed they are because there is like a chance that you play these and get raft and then they do nothing. So good thing they are pretty powerful. We'll see. They are super fun, though. Very, a little build-aroundy, although they build around themselves. The green one, that's like three mana, then you Earthbend.
Sure, just straight up ramps.
But then
three mana,
just landfall or something? Yeah.
Landfall put counters on stuff. That's like,
oh,
that's
right,
like what green likes doing.
Yeah, sure.
All right. Well, I think that will about wrap it up for the avatar cards that we think are best in the 99. We're going to go in the future. We're going to be talking about the best new commanders. And boy, howdy, there's a lot of them. I just like a video tier listing all of them. And there's like over 100. So it's a long video.
Oh,
and yeah, there's a lot of bangers. So I don't know. What are your closing thoughts, y'all? What do you think about the cards, the sets? What are you
I'm
feeling
open
going
to
in?
Get the owl. Anything I found that anything Wan Shi Tong is like good, right? His planetarium, Wan Shi Tong himself, right?
That so, card's cool too.
Yeah, I really like that. And you know, there's even some cards that we didn't get to fully mention, like Fire Nation Drill. There's just a lot to play with here. When it comes to
we didn't even mention the cup, the thing that Bejamol cup.
Oh,
I
yes.
If you have mana dogs, it's crazy. Oh,
or if you Earthbend, all your lanes tap for an additional green, too, which is insane. And then also, one for CDH players. I'm calling it now. The Cabbage Merchant makes a cabbage, makes a food token every single time somebody casts a non-creature spell.
Right. We'll
I know CDH players love casting non-creature spells a lot each turn. That's a lot of cabbages.
I'm
going to
put this in
the bonus, tap for mana.
And we'll see.
Oh my God! It's gonna be so
you're gonna run
bonus.
Wild with cabbages.
Yeah. All right, so you can, as you can see, I think there are so many cards we can talk about, but we got to wrap things up eventually, and now is the time. So let us know what your favorite cards are. If there was anything like notable that we missed, and then also, what are your favorite commanders? Because we're gonna be doing a video on that next week. Talking about our favorite commanders. So let us know. Maybe there's some like, cool synergies or cool ones that we were not thinking about that we might give a shout out for next week. So let us know down below. Also, I just realized now that we didn't do a comment of the week because I didn't have it. And you can keep this in, Morgan. You can keep it not. But that's what happened. Oops-a-daisy. We'll probably do it next week. Who knows? All right. That's all for now. Until next time, friends. See ya.